Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with Pegasus Senior Living CEO Chris Hollister. The Dallas-based senior living company operates over 50 communities in 13 states. Pegasus Senior Living continues to grow in 2026, surpassing 50 communities under management after taking on a portfolio of 10 communities in Texas. The company is expanding with the aim of using scale as a strategic advantage, preparing for a future in which healthcare services are more tightly integrated with senior living, and operations that center on personalized engagement and lifestyle enrichment.
A lot of things to be excited about. You know, it's a big move for us, quite a big growth step.
Now, here's my interview with Pegasus Senior Living CEO, Chris Hollister. Chris, thanks so much for joining us here again on Transform.
Thanks, Austin. Thanks for having me.
For those who might not be familiar with Pegasus, do you want to just outline what the portfolio looks like today? I know there's been some exciting new growth that we'll talk about here in a little bit, but I want to just give a chance for you to familiarize folks with the Pegasus platform.
Sure. Well, we've been growing fairly significantly as of late. We first took on two new buildings with a new capital partner in the DFW area that are freestanding memory care. And right on the back of that, we got a contract with a separate new capital partner for 10 new buildings, all in Texas, heavily concentrated in what we call the Texas Triangle, which aligns perfectly with our growth trajectory. We're in 13 states right now, Austin, and we have about 6,500 units, and we're significantly tilting with this new management contract with independent living. So six of those buildings are independent living. Five of them are really very large, anywhere from 264 to one of them is over 500 units, amazingly. So quite a bit of big shift towards independent living. We already had about maybe 800 or 900 units of independent living, but we are growing that part of the portfolio quite a bit. So we're very excited. A lot of things to be excited about. You know, it's a big move for us, and quite a big growth step.
Yeah, with that shift, I want to ask just a quick follow up off of the communities that have that independent living exposure. Did you just feel like the time was right to expand the independent living component that Pegasus has overseen historically and really expand from there?
Well, we feel we have the chops to do it. You know, I just because you've been in it a long time doesn't mean you're still good at it. You got to stay fresh on trends, but this has really been my home career, and Rich Williams, one of our two co-presidents, which we'll talk about in a minute, but he's been in it as long as I have. Dr. Sandy Peterson's been in it for a long time. So we don't really think of ourselves at all of active adult. We've never done active adult, kind of evolved when I was already in sector for years. I actually got a tour one. I was fascinated by it just because some folks asked me to tour one and give my opinion because they're having a slower lease than they expected. But we would not want to get in that space. That's much more tilted more to the real estate. But anything from IL or independent living all the way through assisted in memory care, and we like assisted living, of course, with a memory care component. But I think any operator, if they tell you the truth, we're opportunistic. It's not like we go in with a supercomputer and figure out, you know, who, targeting these. The phone rang, we answered it. It's a good opportunity for us. It's right in our core markets, and we're excited to take it on.
And just in terms of taking on the new management contracts for those 10 additional communities last month, how do you think this really shapes future growth for what Pegasus can expect? I mean, like you just said, you've expanded the independent living component, and now we know that, especially in the conversations I've had with Dr. Peterson and yourself, the memory care and assisted living always seems to be kind of the table stakes, if you will, of what Pegasus does well. So in terms of this opportunity, going back to how you said it was pretty opportunistic, do you want to just outline how this really informs future growth and what we can expect next? It seems like a great step, puts you over the 50 community mark, and anytime we know you hit a number like that, it really creates a lot of scale. So just want to get your thoughts on this new growth spurt that Pegasus had taken on.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, I think our vision is really to have integrated senior living networks in the three mega metro areas of Houston, DFW, and Austin, San Antonio. If we were anywhere else in the world, if it was in Europe, it'd be one of the largest countries, Texas, not to sound like a braggadocious Texan, but you could say the same thing about California, perhaps New York or Florida. These are just giant places. There's 30 million people. I think like 24 million of those people are in what demographers call the Texas Triangle, from the approximately 250-mile triangle from DFW to Houston, San Antonio, and back. And then we would like to stitch that together. You have major medical complexes. Houston is not only known as Space City, but it's one of the top medical centers in the world. And I think the future of healthcare is going to be more integrated. And reaching out in the future where you can partner with regional hospice, regional home health, regional even acute care providers that now know the Pegasus name, because I think you have to get to a certain density. Branding has not been a big deal. Very few people have pulled it off. I think it's much harder to do nationally than regionally. And our view is really focusing on Texas. Now, look, if we got a cluster in, pick a state, Nashville or Tennessee or something, yeah, we'd go. But I really think it's best to cluster these communities. And I saw that back in the day in the 90s when I had Southern Assisted Living. When we had 15, 20 communities, it didn't really mean anything. When we had 43, it meant a lot. Just, you have a brother in Winston-Salem, you live in Raleigh, your cousin's in Charlotte, they have a good experience with Southern Assisted Living, you start knowing that brand. And we're going to do some creative things with a Pegasus statue that we're getting commissioned. We think it could be a eye-catching thing and help build the brand. And, it's a symbol of inspiration from the Middle Ages, and it's also a symbol of Dallas. So it aligns very well with our whole strategy of density.
Wonderful. And to your point there, back to the triangle itself, I know that that's an area you focused on. We know that I think over half of Pegasus's properties are in Texas. I want to get your thoughts on why that area just makes so much sense, because I think we've heard kind of over the years that in some instances, that area for senior living has some of the best market penetration, some of the best education in terms of folks who know what senior living actually is. They understand the continuum. While that education piece is still critical, I just want to outline kind of your thinking behind the Texas Triangle itself and why that's been sort of a hotbed for Pegasus. Obviously, it's your backyard. You got to do well where at home. But in terms of why that area has been so fruitful and so opportunistic for yourself and the company, can you just share your thoughts on why that?
Yeah, I think number one, I'm a fifth generation Texan on both sides of my family. I grew up in Dallas. I tend to think of this as my home region and identity, even. And it has great fundamentals. Whether it's population growth, it's very well diversified with respect not just energy, but high tech and manufacturing, distribution, tourism. It ticks all the boxes. There's still very dynamic growing metro areas. Not that we don't have our challenges. I think long-term, San Antonio, Austin have some pretty serious water problems they need to address. But overall, I don't see anything stopping the growth of Texas as a really economic dynamo. So the fundamentals are good. It's still a pretty low cost of living. I think it's adequately regulated. I don't think people say, it's lightly regulated. I think the regulators do a good job. TALA is a strong Texas Assisted Living Association. We're active in that with some of our folks. And it just makes sense. And obviously, we're here at a moment, and I started as a feasibility analyst with where we are demographically, just with the demand, with the baby boom turning 80. And really now it's very hard to develop, and certainly at a price point that's going to undercut our price point. So we're sort of a middle, we think of ourselves as a middle market, high quality, but focused on quality and value and delivering superior service. We want that to be the brand identity.
You know, I was just thinking about this as we were chatting, and just given that the Artemis II mission has been in the public eye for this last week, we know that Pegasus has also opened a space-themed memory care community in Houston. I'm sure that has been pretty interesting in the last year. I know this is off the cuff, but it was just something that I had thought of as we were chatting here. Any excitement there you want to share around that specific community? I know that one was probably pretty exciting to put together. Because of all their, I saw some of the things about the memorabilia that's there. There's a lot of references to exploration, and I think a lot of what's next and success for folks outside of business and for humanity in general. So I want to just touch on the Houston property for a second, since we've, we've got the Artemis on.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up, Austin. Now, this was sort of my brainchild. I mean, we bought this building, and you know, it was really underperforming, and we spent a lot of time. We got a great team in there now. We're ramping up occupancy. It is assisted living and memory care. It's a 6-story building in a very affluent part of Houston, known as the Tanglewood neighborhood. H.W. Bush lived there, President Bush, and it's kind of halfway between River Oaks and Houston Country Club. It's 6-story. We've done a full renovation, and you know, there's some very high quality, upscale competitors all around us, and you know, we don't have an indoor pool. We're 25-year-old building. I thought we got to do something creative, so we really wanted to make it sort of give an homage to the city of Houston. So that building is now called Pegasus Landing of Tanglewood, and I got on Heritage Auction, started buying space memorabilia, and I spent about $30,000. That stuff's probably worth $100,000 now because it's gotten the space thing is back. And My brother's a high-tech CFO in Austin. His best friend is a metal fabricator. And I, with a great architectural team, we came up with a pergola that is we're calling the launch pad. And each of the 6 posts is dedicated to the 6 Apollo missions that landed on the moon. And it's silver, like a spaceship. It kind of evokes a launch pad. So this is the grand opening is May 19th. If you want to come down, we're trying to get people from NASA there and make it quite a big deal. And, you know, I'm just very proud of that for what just, I think it's going to be a very successful project, but you know, we're doing something for the city of Houston, which is sort of refinding or re-exploring, if you will, its own identity as Space City. My dad was a Dallas banker. He had actually met Alan Shepard, who hit the famous golf ball on the moon.
Right.
And he used to laugh when people say the moonshot was fake. He said, well, I guess I need to go tell Alan that he didn't actually hit a golf ball on the moon. And we actually have it's a reproduced print from Alan Shepard commemorating that golf shot. Probably the most famous golf shot in the world, right. I'd say on Earth, but it wasn't on Earth. So it's pretty cool. I mean, people are excited about it.
Exactly. Yeah, and with the Artemis mission, I had assumed there was probably a lot of excitement around the community itself and just overall leading up to this. I know I've personally been following along quite closely, listening to the press briefings and what have you. And we'll bring it back to Earth here and to Pegasus. But I appreciate the sidebar there. Wanted to bring it up since the astronauts are still up there and now on their return journey home. And now I want to chat on where you see some of the priorities and operations, and then we'll get to staffing here in a little bit, because I know that's been a big focus in the last few years for the team and yourself. But just overall for 2026, do you maybe want to highlight just operational priorities, what we can expect from Pegasus? I know probably integration is number one of making those new communities feel like they fit into the portfolio, but where do you see priorities and operations for this year?
Well, we have done a great job with the line staff. We try, Kat Pygott, our SVP of People and Culture, is really one of the top. She's clearly the top HR person I've ever worked with. Hope she's listening. And, of course, Dr. Sandy Peterson is an amazing, beloved character in senior living and devoted her whole life to this field. And we have, you know, Rich Williams, 40 years, me in it, 40 years. Wade Mullis is not from the sector, but he's learned it quickly, and Chad Kugler is now our CFO, and Brittany Fisher is our SVP of Sales and Marketing, very talented. And so we have a great strong team. I think we're ready for this step up. And I think people what I hear from Ken's that, you know, our culture is strong. People want to work for Pegasus. We try to pay wages at about the top quarter percentile, right at that 75-25 line above the median. And we don't really have any agency anymore. I mean, we killed agency probably last year, kind of drove a stake through its heart. I don't want to say every blue moon we don't have it with a nurse or something, but in general, we don't have agency in the company. I think there was an article yesterday came out, I think from Asha, about that this is healthcare now. I've thought it's healthcare for 40 years, at least 30 years when I started selling assisted living. Is it real estate? Of course it's real estate. We're an income producing real estate property, but it is an incredibly complex operational platform that defies the big thing that people aren't in it. And I hope the capital partners have gotten smarter. Is the thing that people cannot understand that have never done it is how much is going on every day in the building, and the fact that at least a third, if not half, your people in assisted living have some level of cognitive impairment. That changes everything, because you cannot rely on the information that you're getting. The data is suspect all the time, and there is a constant push-pull trying to find the right balance between autonomy and control, because every community is different. They do have different needs, but you still have to have controls. And I think we have been probably tilted more towards the autonomy end of things compared to other operators. And when we're good, I think we're very good. When we're not good, we have issues. And we spent a lot of time trying to hire, understand using predictive index of how to hire an executive director. I think we've done a good job of that. It's still not perfect, but we're hiring better for that key position. I think we still struggle, and the whole industry is struggling, Austin, in my view. The central challenge, you say, if I could have a magic wand, how would I fix it? It is how to do the clinical within this platform the right way. Nurses generally do not want to be managers. They hate dealing with I'm making a blanket statement. And there's some great nurses who have that special skill set. Some of our regionals are nurses. Obviously, they can manage. A lot of nurses, from a personalized standpoint, they want to go in, they want to do the charts, they want to do the clinical expertise, is what they're trained to do, and they want to go home. They don't want to be dealing with staffing at 8 p.m. They don't want that as a lifestyle, and they don't want all that headache. So we're looking at some creative ideas of how to tweak the model. I'm talking about the day-to-day on-site model of running the senior living, not the regional staff, to make that a better outcome clinically. The clinical needs are just by far the most complicated thing in assisted living. That's always been true. It's certainly getting more true. And what I think is going to get harder, and I'm probably talking too much. I do that. I apologize. But there's not going to be any room at the end because no one is building. And the demand is, I think, 3x. If you talk to Eric Morton, a shout out to Eric for Map, Nick Vision Maps, et cetera. It's like 3x it's ever been this year. I think it's going to be 5x, the trend line. And no one is building. So since last October, it has been like a faucet going off. I mean, I think we have almost half our portfolios that are either, half our communities are either at 99% or 100%. Approximately half the entire portfolio is completely full, or within, you know, one unit of being completely full. And, you know, where we aren't, there's good reasons for it. We've had operational challenges. The executive director left. We have clinical issues. We have a regulatory issue. And so it's getting a narrower. So if you look at like a golf score, you know, we're getting more pars and even and maybe a few birdies and bogeys. We're having less triple bogeys. You know, we're not, but we still have a few. And when they're bad, it can still be bad just because it's operational problems that demographics don't solve. You're still a people business. You have the right people to run these places.
Do you think about maybe from zooming back into the recent management acquisition of those 10 new communities that Pegasus just brought on. We know that integration is a critical piece to bring folks up to speed. I know you've probably thought about a lot of that, especially in the last month or so, and even before that. Do you want to highlight just the priorities in integration here for getting those communities on board and kind of getting them into the playbook that Pegasus executes on in terms of daily operations? Want to get your thoughts on some of those critical pieces for that integration.
Well, thank you. Well, I mean, we're fortunate that there's a lot of just wonderful people in these communities. They are very loyal to their communities and to their residents, and they have done a lot of research on us already. They wanted to know who the heck this Pegasus group is. And so, you know, I think, again, the culture we built and the fact that we're based in Texas, and these are all Texas communities, has bode well for us. There's still, you know, a way of doing things, and we'll have to try to, you know, that control autonomy thing I talked about, we need to try to work on that as well as we can. There's some things we're doing that are going to be helpful. We have hired a lady who's an expert in the whole concept of emotional intelligence, and we're doing a series of trainings with her of bringing these folks in. We try to spend a lot of time with our executive directors, and, you know, fear kills trust, and we have to build trust. And then these sessions are a way we found to build trust. We have a big exec director annual event we're doing. We call it Getting in Sync. We're going to have a pretty famous speaker come to that. It isn't death by PowerPoint. It's more about giving them a moment to break into small groups, tell us, have us listen. Yeah, will there be some presentations? Yes, but those are some of the things we do on every aspect, whether it's care or dining or business office managers. We have subject matter experts that have been in there since before we took over April 1 that are continuing to mentor and lead and go through Relias training and do all the things you have to do. I will say this quickly is I think we have some exciting ideas for hospitality. I think we need to sharpen our hospitality chops as we pivot more to the independent living. It is a different business. I mean, it is people, I think the blanket term of senior living sometimes masks the fact that different skill sets are leave as you move around this continuum. And sure. It would be a deeper conversation. Life enrichment is a passion of mine, particularly music. You know, I'm kind of a mediocre musician, but we're trying to do a lot with music and bringing life into this. We want to do some things with what I call experience engineering, where we really try to do personalized service when people move in, find out what they're interested in, give them a gift, make sure no one's eating alone. Just the basics. But these are human habitats or communities. We're not just providing meals and air conditioning in the Houston heat and a bit of fun. We are trying to make them have and celebrate and enhance their lives, which is our mission statement. And, you know, I want to make sure we keep people as happy and fit and well as we possibly can. And I think life enrichment is an underappreciated aspect of what we do across the spectrum.
Right. And I think we're learning how, I think in operations, there is a two-way street between clinical and life enrichment and how they can work together for identifying changes in resident condition, but also maybe coming up with new ways for thinking about lifestyle programming in a more personalized way. And I think we're starting to see more personalization across the board from what operators are telling us they are trying to do in engagement with their residents. And so that's encouraging to hear that Pegasus is also thinking along those lines as well. Chris, I want to follow up on something you mentioned about kind of going back to your thesis about senior living as it being positioned uniquely as a healthcare product. Mm-hmm. In terms of what you've seen in recent years, we'll call it since 2020, for the value-based care movement, but also folks looking at alternative payment sources for getting reimbursed for the care that they're providing. Do you see the industry really stepping up and really starting to really own this clinical moniker, if you will? Is there steps ahead you see of the industry continuing to transition to be more care focused in terms of being able to have that assisted living and memory care component be airtight for folks that really are coming into communities with higher acute nature? And so when you're thinking about just the high acuity future that senior living faces, go back to your thoughts on that healthcare piece. And where do you see Pegasus fit in there? I know Pegasus had just recently overhauled the memory care program that we had outlined with Dr. Peterson and her team's work. Do you want to just maybe outline your thinking on what you've seen from an industry level perspective about this shift to really bring healthcare to the center while still having it built around this life engagement and life enrichment model?
Well, first of all, the first line of defense, I think, is having a very strong rehab partner in the building. And, you know, rehab companies tend to be like assisted living. When they have a good local team, they're great. When they don't, they don't. It doesn't matter what the flag is or what the brand is. And we've had great experiences with a variety of different ones, but we've also had at times inconsistent delivery. But I think just the basics of physical therapy, speech therapy, identifying things that people need can be a huge, huge part of it. And it has been. I think it'll be even more critical going forward. In terms of the value-based care, I've been a little bit of a doubter on it. And part of it is because we've been so spread out. I think as we get the density that we have now, and hopefully we'll continue to grow in the Texas Triangle and stitching that even together, I do think value-based care starts becoming something that makes more sense if you can have the right partner. My critique of that has been often, you know, you got to be careful, and I want to be careful what I say. I don't want to be pejorative, but I think you have to be careful that you're still focusing on your customer is your resident, not the government, and that you're not doing things to tick a box on an iPad to get reimbursed for it. And that you have a gerontologist, not a 29-year-old, 31-year-old doc who doesn't really get it, but the big, you know, partner has hired really people that they're putting into your buildings that don't have anywhere near the chops for gerontology and understanding the drug interactions, all the different things that go on with seniors. But I do think there's an opportunity. I also think AI, this is an area that AI might be able to really help us with. I met with an AI expert yesterday, a local-based person who a friend introduced me to. You know, I just think better business intelligence, being able to get better information on the clinical, yeah, things that we can all see, and also not on a computer, but where people can see it on their phone. And, you know, it's amazing some of the things you can do now with agents and AI, and I'm scratching the surface of it. But, you know, I envision a world where, whether it's an executive director or regional and HWD, they can wake up in the morning, they get some business intelligence piece on their phone that shows them the outliers, that these are five situations you need to look at today. I mean, if you're regional, these are the three communities that are having clinical issues right now today. And I think there's a disconnect between analysts that are doing things on like a double screen on Excel and an ED that's going into stand-up looking at it on their phone. It's just a human cognition differential that we need to somehow solve, because there's different levels of skill, obviously, with Excel in general, but also just interpreting the data. We have a ton of data.
Yep.
And if you have the time to have that nice, calm cup of coffee and spend 2 hours looking at it, you can start connecting the dots and seeing it. When you're rushing around like EDs do and HWDs, we need to make their lives easier in terms of how they interpret that data.
No, that's a very good point. And that honestly, data was a theme we had heard at the NIC conference just recently. It was folks really trying to figure out how they can harness all the data that they have. That makes a lot of sense there. I want to get your thoughts on staffing for Pegasus, because I know it's critical and we've talked a lot about it, I think, so far in the latter half of our conversation. But I want to call back to that Moneyball reference that you had brought up a couple of years ago. And I know that was a big push for really identifying potential future leadership candidates. Any update you want to share there? And then a second question off of that, what prompted Pegasus to go with naming two co-presidents? Would love to understand the shift behind that to co-leadership in that realm specifically.
Great. I'll answer the Moneyball question first. So we, this is all commercially available stuff, and people could find out more about it just online, asking ChatGPT or Copilot about it. But if you're not familiar with predictive index, it has a cognitive fit piece, and it has a personality or behavioral assessment. We've also mixed in an emotional intelligence assessment, because a lot of our challenges, it's, you know, people who aren't in the business cannot understand how emotional and how much it is human skills. I like Austin, okay, go get a beer, but when I'm working with him, he's actually kind of irritating in these three ways, and I need to figure out how to deal with Austin on that, and maybe I'm irritating him in ways that I'm unaware of. I overtalk him, or I'm doing it. Yeah, so people, these little things fester, and they end up degrading the relationship, and some people have a better way of managing that, but on the PI, or predictive index, we just keep refining it. We absolutely know the three or four top personalities to be an executive director. We know the top, there's really just, I think, mainly two for sales director, which are promoter and influencer, which makes sense because that's what they do. And we know what it is for nursing. If you look at it kind of like a astrology chart or whatever, they would be exact opposite. The nurse, the head nurse, the health and wellness director, and the salesperson. So it's no surprise that that's the central conflict in the business. And so then you have got to have a strong ED, which, if I'd say there's one, it's A over C when you look at the four elements of personality in predictive index. The A is sort of assertiveness. They need to be assertive individuals, but not obnoxious. They have to lead. They have to get in there and negotiate these inevitable conflicts between nursing and sales. It isn't that either one's wrong. It's that they're looking at the business through a different lens. And you have to balance those things. You cannot take people that you can't care for, but you don't want to deny people that you can take care for. So where's that balance? Where's that autonomy versus control? So, you know, I think some of my folks might say, we're so focused on the Moneyball aspect of this that we're missing some people that might be good candidates because they don't fit one of these personality types. And it isn't 100% that we won't hire you if you don't have one of these. But we are, as we get more data, relying more on the data than the fact that, you know, we interviewed Austin, and man, he's such a nice guy. He had all the great, perfect answers, because we've learned over time that people are chameleons. And that's really what Moneyball, that movie, was about, where the agent, you know, the guys have been doing this, the scouts, and they were all guys, are saying, no, he's got the look. He's going to be a great hitter because he's got the look. He's got the physique. It revolutionized baseball because it's all become sort of an analytical thing now. But anyway, on the co-presidents, I think, you know, Rich and Wade are both very strong, and it just seemed like a natural fit. I'm more of the strategy, the growth, the new business, the big ideas. I'm not a day-to-day guy. I never have been, and I recognize my own flaws. So I think, well, maybe not all of them, but I try to be self-aware. And I think, you know, Wade is chief investment officer and just has a big portfolio with, you know, risk management, insurance and accounting and finance and new business. He's involved a lot in ops and in decisions. Rich, I mean, I think he's just one of the strongest operators in the sector with 40 years of experience. He has seen so much. He's just a very calm personality that thinks through problems and knows how to get the best out of people. So it seemed to fit for what we do. Is it perfect? No. But I think it has been a natural evolution that is working at the moment.
And just last question here for you, Chris, and I appreciate the background on that thinking for co-leadership, because we've started to see, I think, more operators think about ways that they can have these co-leadership models in their leadership offices, if you will. So it's interesting to really see this, and I wrote about this in 2024 when I'd heard that some folks were thinking about this, and it's been interesting to watch as it's grown. So excited to see that Pegasus has also put that into play as well. Last question here, though, and then we'll get you out of here. What are your thoughts? Any trends you're paying attention to? And I know you mentioned a few things on staffing, around healthcare, around AI. There seems to be a bunch of things on your mind. But if you had to pick maybe one or two trends that you're paying attention to within the industry for this year in 2026, and maybe what you'll be watching most closely, what can we expect? What are you paying attention to?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And these are really good, thoughtful questions. It's kind of the song Bad Moon Rising. I mean, I think the labor crisis with nurses in particular, we are doing pretty well. As I said, we don't have agency anymore from the bad old days of COVID and after, but still getting that right mix. I think the fact that there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, the weight of the upper middle class is by getting a nursing degree. And I think that's very true. That's great if you're a nurse, if you're a business person trying to hire nurses in this field. I think that, as I said earlier, that is something I think is going to get harder. And I think we're all going to be straining at capacity where, you know, unless you do have operational problems, things, you know, we used to run models at 93, even 91%. I think the capital partners, I think they're not wrong. They really, we're 95, 97. I don't know. There's not going to be any room at the end. I think it's a society that is a major problem. I don't know where people are going to go, because the affordability with the cost of care, the cost of electricity with the AI, yep. And then you layer on top of that the geopolitical, you know, I'm trying not to get too freaked out about what's happening in the world. I think there's some real storm clouds on the horizon, but I'm no expert. I'm just a guy. So I try to calm down, you know, put the gun back in the drawer and go do my day job, you know.
Right.
But it is a scary time with a lot of things that are happening geopolitically. And we're all blessed to be in a great field where we're able to serve people, and we're not probably going to be replaced by an AI robot anytime soon. But I think the labor and the lack of alternatives for families.
Yeah.
You know, be careful what you wish for, because we're all suffering through the overbuilt area. I think it'll be an interesting time with third-party referral sources. Do you really need them as much as you did as we get into this mode?
Right.
What can AI do? I mean, my Kia Telluride needed servicing. I had a fully satisfying interaction with an AI robot at the local Kia dealer that kind of blew me away, because it said, "Hi, Sarah, something went through the whole thing. What do you need? One of my tires. This tire, I think it's maybe going flat. I had a nail in it." Set up the whole appointment, scheduled it, confirmed it, sent me a text, and it was not a human. And I didn't have to wait for anybody. And we're in a very human field, but as these things evolve, and it's evolving every month, I think you're going to see some areas of savings on that. But I don't know how it's all going to evolve. But I'd say those are, you know, just the lack of capacity for yep. senior living and the labor, particularly on the care side. I don't see any easy solution to those things. And I do not know what is next for the baby boomers. A lot of people are pontificating about that. I don't know how to build it right now, Austin. It's 350, 400 grand a unit. I don't know who's going to pay 10, 12, 15 grand a month. There's a few zip codes in Texas that you can do that in. You can't do it in Tyler. You can't do it in Waco. I mean, you can't do it in middle America. So.
Right. Yeah, I think there are a lot of ways that the industry will evolve in the next, I'd say, even 2 years, especially. I was asking folks at NIC kind of that question on development, and no one really could give us a straight answer. I know folks are, some of them are taking on the risk now to really look at sites and say, hey, we got to solve this supply problem, even if it means a little bit more of a capital intensive spend at the beginning. So it'll be interesting to watch. And that's a great spot to leave us on. Chris, I appreciate you taking the time here to join us again on Transform. We'll be excited to get the word out there, but best of luck for the rest of 2026, and appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Austin.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.